Good morning. Good Friday to you. You're listening to Jump In Tucson on KVOI 1030, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. I'm Alan Kathin in for Ed Ackerley. Ed's on a plane somewhere going back east. I didn't ask him where. And when he started this show, he asked if I would help him because we've been friends for probably close to 40 years. He was in my wedding, one of the first people I met in Tucson. And I said, Ed, I will help you. But if the phone's not ringing, you'll know it's me. Meaning that he can call or not, and I'm okay either way, doing this show or not. I'm happy to be here today with you guys and reconnect with all the listeners and maybe some of the viewers and listeners in the city. Today is August 16th, and this is the day that my guest died. My guest died today 47 years ago. But here he is in the flesh, sitting right in perfect hair, as usual. But you're supposed to be dead. Why aren't you dead? Val Romero, the Elvis impersonator and king of barbecues in town, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You sound just like you did before you died. I can't believe I'm sitting here with a corpse.
And then hopefully looking a lot better.
You look great. You look great. How old are you? 43?
Yeah. Reincarnated in 1977.
Well, Val owns Arizona Grill and Hearth, and he's got a few things going. He is on the Tucson Unified School District Board as an at-large member, which means you don't have a district. You run and care about the whole district.
Yep.
Instead of just a district, right, which is interesting. And you ran as an independent there.
Well, it was a nonpartisan, but
right,
I'm registered as independent.
Registered independent. And now you are also running as county supervisor in District number 5.
Yes.
As an independent.
Correct.
So we'll talk about that too, but really the thrust of the morning here is about successful businesses, and so you have one, a big one. Arizona Grill and Hearth over on Speedway Boulevard, just a little east of Columbus. If those listeners haven't been there, you should stop in. 10 to 5, right?
10 to 5, correct.
Tell me about the history of Arizona Grill and Hearth.
Arizona Grill and Hearth. Actually, I started back in September of 2005. Was working for another company that sold similar products before that. And ended up going out on my own, started out of the back of my Ford Explorer, and got a showroom on Stone Avenue back, I think, in 2011. And then moved to our current location about 9 years ago. But we specialize basically in the outdoor living. You build the outdoor kitchens, the barbecue grills, the smokers, pizza mm-hmm. ovens, all the accessories that go along with it, fire pits outside. And then we also specialize in fireplaces, both for remodels and new construction as well.
And you also design these things in addition to supplying the hardware.
Correct. So if we have somebody that's looking to do a special design for their outdoor kitchen, we'll print up kind of an idea based on what they're looking to do, and then we'll do the project from start to finish.
The hardscape too?
Well, to an extent for the hardscape. A lot of times if they want to do like
some bricks and
extra pavers, pergolas, fake grass, things of that nature, then we partner with different companies that can aid us in that part of it, and we just focus on the barbecue park.
So without giving away where this location would be residentially, I'm sure it's north of River, what's the best outdoor kitchen and area you have created since you've been here? It's got to be a monster.
Yeah, we've had some where...
No names and no locations, but is it north of River or somewhere?
Usually north of River. There, I can say I have a couple of them. One might be kind of up in the Ventana Canyon area, and then I think we have some up in the Dove Mountain area.
So what makes that? What makes them special for you? Because they've got to be just probably the biggest dream of someone like you to build something like that, you know?
Well, when I go to a house and they look over their neighbor's yard and said, I want something better than theirs.
You know, we had a saying like that in TV. We want $1 more than the competing talent on our contract. Just $1. That was in Phoenix on TV, lady named Mary Jo West. She was the standard bearer for TV contracts, and everyone else needed a dollar more than Mary Jo. So that does, I believe you. What's your phone number for Arizona Grill and Hearth?
It's 520-623-0924.
Okay. And you're a Sal Point alum.
Great. Yep.
Any thoughts about people? Do you get a lot of patronage from Sal Point alums?
Not
that people remember you.
Well, they remember me as, you know, basically as the persona that died today.
Correct. And you're still dead. You look great. Good looking corpse.
You know, we get people from time to time, but, you know, I haven't really promoted myself as the Sal Point grad, you know, come visit us. Yeah. You know, we're here for everybody in our community.
Sure, sure, of course. I'm going to take you back to, and I didn't tell you this, but I knew your predecessor, Dick.
Mm-hmm.
Dick was known as Dick the Gas Man.
Yes.
He worked for Southwest Gas for a long time, and then he retired or quit somehow, and then started his business on Speedway north of Grant Road, and that little brick building north of where the car dealership is, like a sled lot there. And I would be in there all the time, and this was before Val Romero. He was a great guy, and I hear that you kind of like, he kind of mentored you.
Yes.
And you transitioned when he was leaving, you kind of took over what he had.
So yeah, back in it was on Stone Avenue and Dick Ebert, and he I started working for him back in 1995. And it was because of him asking me to come work for him. I was like, no. And then eventually said, yes, I'll come work for you.
Yeah.
And he introduced me to this whole world of barbecues and fireplaces, and I didn't realize I was going to enjoy this industry as much as I did. And it was because of him and his, how he approached business and how he dealt with the customers and the clients and treating everybody with the kindness and respect and just going out of his way to go the extra mile for the clients.
Yeah.
It was something that stuck with me forever. And because of that, and I remember he was at, when I had my ribbon cutting when I opened up the store back on the same location on Stone Avenue,
yeah,
you know, back in 2011. He was the first one to sign my ribbon that cut while I was there, because it was very special that he was there for me.
He was a great man. And I remember going there some, because what you do is interesting to me. It is. And there's a little story behind that. You still have my fireplace over there.
Yes, I do.
It's been sitting there for 3 years. Someday I'll use that fireplace.
I got it for you.
I know you do. It's sitting right there. Every time I come over to see you, there, I check to see you haven't sold it out from under me. It's still right there. It's nice. But it's not for sale, anybody. It's still mine.
It's already paid for.
But he was, as you say, just a tremendous individual. And I remember him saying, come back, I want to show you this. It was the first pellet stove I'd ever seen that uses pellets like a Traeger.
Mm-hmm.
But it heated your home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for applications in northern Arizona, and, you know, central Arizona, maybe a little bit, but not really here in Tucson so much. Do you sell pellet stoves?
We do sell pellet stoves, and we still do sell pellet stoves. I own a pellet stove. So, yes, there was probably a Lennox or a Whitfield pellet stove way back when, because I remember selling those with Dick.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, it's great technology. But, yes, we still sell pellet stoves, and they are still very popular. They're on the pricey side. And they're a little bit more maintenance. So we don't sell as many of those as we do probably wood stoves.
It's basically a Traeger that looks like a fireplace. I mean, isn't that what it is?
Well, it uses pellets. It feeds into the auger. You know, auger feeds into the MERD pot. And yes, the heat from the pellet, you know, is in your room. And it is a green technology.
Mm-hmm. Very low waste.
Yes.
And you use what kind of pellets? I mean, I'm just curious.
So it's compressed sawdust.
We're getting into nerds,
yeah,
nerd now.
It's mostly like just like a pine or an oak, but it's just compressed sawdust is all it is. So all the sawdust that would be just thrown away, they actually use it for a fuel.
We're going to take our first break right now at about 9:18. Mr. Matt Neely is driving the bus for us. Matthew, thanks as always. We'll be back. Jump in Tucson. A special guest, Dead Elvis. Good looking guy.
Thank you.
Val Romero.
Thank you very much.
That guitar player sucks. Holy cow. 921. I'm Alan Kaith, along with my guest Val Romero on Jump in Tucson. Ed Ackerley is taking a break today. We talked a little bit about your business. You have a dinner tonight.
Yes, a dinner fundraiser tonight.
And so that is a beautiful transition as to what you're doing now. Tell me about what you're doing now in District 5 and what you plan to do.
Yes, so yes, we're doing a campaign fundraiser tonight at MySpace on Arizona Grill and Hearth on Jerry Avenue. And it's again collecting money for the campaign for running for Board of Supervisors in District 5.
Great food, by the way.
We're doing pulled pork, smoked chicken, and potatoes.
It's great food. Let me ask you, when did you start gathering signatures for this run as a supervisor to be?
I think we got started probably right around February earlier this year.
And how many signatures do you need? I should know this.
Oh, no, that's fine. We needed roughly around 1,100 signatures.
And you got more than that.
Yeah, we got almost 1,400 signatures.
Was there any contested
No, we had plenty of qualified signatures. That's what my team definitely does. We dot our I's, cross our T's, especially right. When it comes to signatures.
So you are running and a native. I just kind of wonder, why do you choose to be an independent as opposed to a Republican or a Democrat running for this seat? Does it make it a little harder for you to do it that way?
Well, first of all, I've been a registered independent since 2000. So I was registered independent before that, switched to Democrat for 1 year, and then went back to being an independent. In District 5, the layout is a little bit different. Registered Democrats in District 5, we have 56,382 Democrats. Mm-hmm. We have 16,433 Republicans. And with the independents, well, we have 36,863. And then just so you know, Libertarians, we have 789. So based on last election, mm-hmm. the gentleman that ran against the incumbent, he lost by about 36,000 votes, and that's about how many independents are out there. My hopes are to get the independents out to vote. That is going to be huge in the first part.
It is. That's a big lift. And yep. Knowing that the state of Arizona has more registered independents than R's or D's, right now, more people are leaving the party, it seems, and registering as an independent. So whoever is running for anything has to get the independent voter. They're dead in the water. So I know you're dedicated to doing that. It's a harder lift, though, it seems.
It's going to be a harder lift, but I feel based on, because I have to get votes from all across the board here. So as an independent, if you're a Democrat, it's a lot easier pill to swallow to vote for an I than an R. And as a Republican, it's a lot easier to vote for an I than a D.
That's right.
Because like I think we mentioned, it's kind of a very tribal a lot of times in some of these people that are in the party. But the people that are leaving the party see it's that way, and they want somebody that's, from people I've talked to, they're tired of party politics. Mm-hmm. And my hope is also being that there's a independent in the presidential election, maybe more independents will also come out because of that. So the thing is with me, it's just me and my opponent. We don't have another Republican or Libertarian, anybody else running in it. It's basically a D or an I in this election.
Right. And you're everyone. When you said it's easier to vote for an I than a D if you're a Republican, or vice versa.
Right.
You're everyone's second favorite choice, right?
Pretty much.
Because if you don't like your person, you're the second favorite choice. So you get that vote by default. It's interesting how you've thought of this and strategized it. So one more quick one about the endorsements. You do have endorsements from people and from groups.
I ask for support. I hate the word endorsement because it makes me feel that I'm they're entitled to something from me. So I ask for support. Mm-hmm. And if an organization wants to endorse me, that's their doing. But again, I prefer the word support because I'm going to be doing what's right for the constituents and what I feel morally correct with me. And just because someone endorsed me, it's like, well, you have to do what I say. I don't want to be held in that category.
Right. And quite frankly, that's your... It seems like your charge at TUSD when you're an at-large member, too. Mm-hmm. You know, nonpartisan, of course, but at-large, meaning you have to watch for everyone's interest, no matter which district you're in.
Right, and I get a lot of that, too, from people that maybe I agree with or maybe I don't agree with on certain things, but they're reaching out to me, so I have to advocate for them no matter what. And, you know, I kind of keep my politics... close behind, away, mm-hmm. because I'm here to represent those that I'm a public servant,
yeah.
those that voted for me or didn't vote for me, but I'm in that position.
I was doing a little research on the government part of your life, and I noticed that there was a questionnaire that you did not participate in. And I asked you about it off the air, and I'd like you to tell me what you said, because the Metro Chamber sends out questionnaires now instead of endorsements on their website. And on that website, they say did not do or whatever, you did not do it. And there were others that didn't do it too. I think Mr. Hines didn't do one, several others. But I was wondering why you didn't do that, and I thought your answer was acceptable.
Well, it's pretty easy. I wasn't aware. Yeah, and there's other ones that I've run across, like the League of Women Voters. There's an event coming up in September that I will be at. But to be honest with you, I have not received very many questionnaires for this election as of now.
Have you received any?
I had one request from the Sentinel. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be sending me some questions on that. But other than that, I have not really received any questionnaires. And I don't know, maybe they don't have my email or my website in contact.
they certainly know you're running. You're not forgotten, like your predecessor, for sure. Lastly, tell me about why you are in the Hawaiian theme. Aloha, mahalo. You dress Hawaiian, you act Hawaiian, but you're a Tucson native.
Yes. So many years ago, I got my first experience in Hawaii when my dad got remarried. And it was just something about the connection of being in Hawaii. I couldn't understand it when I got back. It was just like there was something that I was missing that now that I left. And then my second time I went back, it was even stronger, and I wanted to find out what the word aloha really meant. And it's like the presence of breath, treating people with kindness, love, and respect, putting positive energy into the universe, not expecting things back, but, putting positive vibes out there. And when I was going for business, people were telling me, oh, it's a dog-eat-dog world. You got to be ruthless. You got to be this. You got to be that. It's like, well, if I'm going to be in business, I can't do it that way. After coming back from Hawaii that second time, I said, I'm going to run my business based on the philosophy of the spirit of aloha.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I put it on the back of my cards, and we thrived.
I wish you good luck, my friend.
Well,
good luck
you.
With your dinner tonight. Good
thank
luck with
much.
Your run for supervisors, District 5. Val Romero, who's dead. He is dead, but he looks very much alive.
Back to see you, Al.
Good to see you, Val. Thanks for coming. Jump in Tucson continues after the bottom of the hour news. Bill Close, former Channel 10 anchor in Phoenix, Matt and I kind of had our teenage years in Phoenix, so we're kindred souls, and Matt's father started, along with Mr. Close, the Arizona Bola Tie Society. I don't think I got the name right, but I'm wearing my bola tie, Matt, because my whole shtick got hijacked from me from a former host here on your radio station.
You're taking it back.
So that used to wear, apparently, according to Christy Simone, wears beard oil. So Bola Tie Friday was my idea from 2006. And so
I think he did it once. So
well, I know he tried. So I just thought, that's my gig. I'm taking it back. With me, a great man, Russell True, who I've seen at a distance, but never been formally introduced to until just now. Russell, owner of the White Stallion Ranch. Russell, welcome.
Well, great to be here. Thanks.
You're out at the tail end of Silver Bell and right where it bends into Rattlesnake Pass.
Right, just on the west side of the mountains that over Rattlesnake Pass.
And Rattlesnake Pass is right at the tail end of kind of Continental Ranch, just to give you a perspective of where it is before right. You get into the new development of Marana, Gladden Farms, right?
Well, we're a little bit east of Gladden Farms. We're directly south of Saguaro Bloom, which is also a new subdivision.
It's growing out there like crazy.
Oh, yeah. I used to ride my motorcycle and horses all over that cotton field.
No more cotton out there. It's too valuable. No. Plus, we need the water.
It's all in the closets.
So tell me about the origin of the White Stallion. You've, for the millionth time, you probably told this history, but I haven't heard it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have told it a few times. So it started out, oddly enough, as a squatter's ranch. So it was some folks running cows. They just went out and built a adobe house, headquarters, drilled a well, had some corrals. Probably around 1900. 1927, the Taylor Grazing Act is passed, and the federal government takes control of that unregulated, fundamentally ignored property that is now called the BLM. So 1936, a guy named David Young comes in and homesteads it, and he gets a big head start. He gets a house and a well and some corrals, and he's off and running. And then he sells it, and in 1945, a guy from Chicago, Max Zimmerman, who had the largest liquor store in the world, one square block on Michigan Avenue, he,
yeah,
if it was liquor, he had it. And so he decides he wants to have a dude ranch. And so he joins the incredibly large group of dude ranches in Tucson. We were the dude ranch capital of the world back then. And so 45, he adds some buildings, turns it into a dude ranch. His wife makes him sell it a little while later. Couple more owners later, our parents are tired of snow cold and business they were in Denver, Colorado, and they threw the dice and went all in and bought a dude ranch. They knew nothing about horses, cows, or hospitality. And so, you know, just work ethic and a bit of smarts, and we're there 59 years later.
I lived in Denver for a little while, and that Front Range wind knocks your socks off. Otherwise, it's a great city. But
yeah, it's a beautiful city.
What did they
just
do?
Well, they were what in the oil business is called landmen, and it's, of course, a sexist term. But my mother did it, even when women weren't working back in the late 50s, early 60s. And so they traveled the Rocky Mountain West and made lease agreements either for themselves or
Marvin
oil
Davis.
Companies.
Did they ever know Marvin Davis, the king of the Permian Basin there?
Oh, I'm sure. But that was all before my time. What I know about oil is it turns into gas and moves my car around.
Well, I'll tell you, I've had a little experience with that on a piece of property. And those leases, there's a little bit of negotiation you can do with someone like your mom and dad, but not a lot. There's not a lot of elbow room for what they're allowed to offer you, because then word gets around. And somebody got a lot more money than somebody else. And so they're kind of limited, aren't they?
Well, I mean, we've got some old agreements of our parents. It's exactly what you say. It's interesting because they'll sit there and they'll try and peel people off at certain, you know, in a field that they think might be a prospect. And they'll try and peel somebody off at a low rate and then go get the rest.
And say, hey, look what this guy paid.
Yeah.
He was lucky to get that, or she was lucky to get that.
Absolutely.
So back to the White Stallion. We know now how it started. Your mom and dad got it coming in blind. They had a couple of kids.
Yep.
Turned out halfway decent, you and your brother.
We got a work ethic.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. You know, it's my great friend Ken Neal, lifetime dude rancher like me, he said, when my boys were young, he said, teach them work ethic and you've done your job. And I thought that was simplistic and off base. And you know what? I think it's right. And I think everything springs from that. And I've got a little six-year-old daughter now, so I'm a grandpa-age daddy.
Grandpa-dad, that's me too.
Yeah.
Look to your left. She's visiting here. Grandpa-dad.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything.
That's all right.
So doesn't bother me either.
She's maybe the reason I'm still around.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep us young.
Oh, and it means more the second time because you're wiser.
Yeah, you can give them a lot more.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the amenities of what you're offering. And I got to ask you, when you're telling me this, I'm going to ask you next about how you motivate people like my daughter to come out there when they're stuck to their phone. What do you do to make them interested in animals and the desert? Because these kids are a challenge. They've got to be to you.
Well, I'll answer that question first. The phones make me crazy, and every now and then we have to put our foot down on the phone thing. And, you know, frankly, whether they're your daughter's age or my age, everybody seems, you know, I walked in the dining room the other day and there was a father and a son, our father and daughter, and the daughter's maybe 15, and there's two people and three phones being operated. That's not an exaggeration. Daddy had two.
Wow.
And
work and pleasure phone.
Yeah, exactly. And they're both looking at the phone, sitting across. I thought, oh man, this is a miss, folks. I wanted to grab them. So to the staff, I think we've got a lot of young people who do really great work for us. And another quote I make a lot is, as Tony Azzapo Shoes says, it's not customer service, it's company culture. And I think we have a company culture that embraces people that want to work and be authentic with our guests and engage with these interesting people from all over the world and be outside and look at beautiful mountains and great cactus gardens. And, you know, everything goes outside really quickly. We're not a hotel with corridors. And I think the people think their phone is more important than the rest of life. They just go somewhere else.
Yeah, they don't necessarily enjoy that experience.
I think they self-select.
You know, I have a picture of my wife and son at a grand opening of a restaurant about a year ago over on Campbell Avenue, and I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting there. We know all these people around us, and they're on their phones.
Oh.
My wife and my son, both, you know, old enough to know better. And so I took a picture of it, and I put it on Facebook, and I said, this is unbelievable that I've got people sitting in a restaurant, and they don't converse, you know? It's their own little world. And I just wondered how you handled that. It sounds like it's a good solution. You kind of let them know gently.
Well, yeah, we sometimes let them know less gently. But I think on the guest side, you know, they still have their phones. And Lord knows they take a million pictures. And that aspect of the phone is, you know, we call them phones, right? They're just really mobile computers. They do everything for us. And I think that they travel often many thousand miles from Europe or UK or wherever they came from. And they came for a reason, and pretty quickly that reason overtakes the phone. And they want to go out horseback riding. That's the core of any dude ranch experience. We've got a varied riding program, unlike most ranches, exceeding most. And then we have e-bikes and rock climbing, and that's not a
dude ranch type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's not a manufactured rock wall. It's a mountain with 35 climbs on it. And we go out shooting and doing archery, and we have entertainment every night. And pretty soon, the real experience, the authenticity of being there grabs them.
Takes a couple of days to get the city off of you, though, I'll bet.
We inappropriately, internally call it, I'm releasing the secret, we call it the three-day rule.
Got to be there 3 days.
It takes 3 days before the phone goes away, yeah. And the anxiety diminishes, and they embrace the experience completely.
You have a designation by USA Today. Tell me about that.
We've had a few. I think a few years ago, 2019, we were number one family resort in the world, or in the U.S., sorry. I think we're number two dude ranch in America, according to USA Today. Last year, we just got picked best dude ranch in America by Lux Magazine. We love those awards, and we're proud of them, and they make us feel good. But the one that means the most to us is being number one on TripAdvisor for 10 years in a row for Tucson.
Is that like the 300-pound gorilla of referral internet?
Absolutely.
Places.
Absolutely.
Because I've heard that they're big. I just don't use them myself. I try to use someone like you that would tell me word of mouth where
right.
to go.
Yeah, me too. Those were good old days. But yes, they are. And, you know, we're in really high quality company in Tucson. I mean, I don't want to name the names because I'll forget some and it'll make me feel bad. But
I can name one.
Yeah.
Out of the end of Speedway.
Well, and that's a dude ranch, yeah. Tankaverde, and I'll name it. It's a great dude ranch. It has amazing history and does a great job, and we're proud to be part of the Tucson dude ranch. We are the Tucson dude
you
ranch.
You are the Tucson
now.
Dude
there
ranch,
we're the
yeah.
two left standing. But there's so many great resorts and spas that get national and worldwide attention, and we're in that company.
And I'm stepping out here, probably a lot less expensive than those others that we hear about in the area that start with ranch or end with the word ranch, probably a more reasonable price.
You know, I just answered an interview yesterday and somebody said, what is it that's going to, what makes you stand out? And I think to your point, we feel we're an exceptionally good value. And we offer everything from the traditional full package dude ranches offer to bed and breakfast, getaway today in between. And we've always felt like we give people their money's worth and more. And so I wouldn't disagree with you.
Have you ever been to the Wigwam Resort in Goodyear?
Yeah.
What do you think of that? What do you think of that place? And it seems like that's what you're partly trying to do, or at least we're trying to do. I mean, it was out there in nowhere. They did all kinds of neat things, but it was still enough city where you could gradually get back in if you wanted to, or go full cowboy.
Well, I like the Wigwam. Wigwam started out as a dude ranch. And
Goodyear Tire and Rubber.
Yeah. And so it was, you know, Phoenix was a hotbed at some level for dude ranching. There wasn't a single dude ranch that made it into the 80s in the Phoenix area, other than Saguaro Lake Ranch, which is a great ranch still there at the backside of the dam of Saguaro Lake. But other than that, Phoenix has none and didn't have any for a long time. Tucson, Wickenburg, Rimrock were the big places for dude ranching. But Wigwam is a great example. Westward Look was a dude ranch. Our parents could have bought it.
Really? Canyon, for how much? Did they tell you?
No, I don't. That's interesting. I don't know. It was before it became what we would right. today term a resort. It was for sale. Wild Horse Ranch was for sale. Lazy K Bar, which is gone, lies under 178 homes today. Wild Horse is a wedding venue, terrific place, but no longer a lodging destination. So of those four that they could have bought, were the last one standing as a dude ranch. Westward Look's a great resort.
Russell True, our guest. We're going to take the break on Jump in Tucson. Alan Kaith in for Ed Ackerley, my good friend, who's, I think, vacationing, but I'm not sure. We'll be back with the final segment with Mr. True. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm Alan Kaith in for Ed Ackerley, and my guest today is Russell True from the White Stallion Ranch, the owner, along with his brother, Michael. Tell me a little bit about your brother. He's involved with you.
Right. So he's the younger brother, and he is, by choice, behind the scenes. He's mm-hmm. just as active. He works harder than I do. He does all the sort of miserable jobs. He oversees our books. He keeps the landscaping, the transportation, the maintenance. You know, it's an old property and it's big and there's a lot of stuff going on and our gardens are a big feature, so cactus gardens. So he's just got a lot going on.
You complement each other.
Yeah.
That's
you
what
know,
you
and,
do.
Yeah, and he's sort of Mr. Cowboy, you know. He was 30 years still PRCA member, competed in rodeos all across the Southwest and was a successful bulldogger, team roper. We still put on a little rodeo every week, and our family and friends are involved. But, you know, he, even though he's Mr. Charisma and sort of the iconic cowboy, he'd rather send me in to do radio interviews.
He doesn't like this.
You know, he doesn't really. And we do a lot of TV and movie stuff. We just did Lainey Wilson music video. We did a thing for Flair Airlines, which was teach some guys how to do some rodeo stuff. And, you know, he doesn't even want to be on camera anymore. He's been in a bunch of it, and He just says, go get somebody else.
Flair Airlines, the Canadian airline that has a couple stops, I think, seasonally here in Tucson.
Yeah, I mean, they were really pushing Tucson, and I think they may have pulled out, but we were part of their promotion initially. They brought in a couple of goofy Canadians to learn how to be cowboys, and we were the ones who did it.
Did you succeed?
You know, with one of them.
Right on.
He was a star. The other guy, he got scared. And,
afraid he'd get hurt.
And he might have.
Yeah. You put out fires. This off-air conversation that I'm bringing onto the air. You put out a lot of fires on a daily basis. Everyone does that has a business. But what are some of the more notable fires you've had to put out at your business, your ranch?
Oh, I mean, it could be anything.
Cows get out?
Yeah, the cows get out. They got out 3 days ago, and they're doing construction out in front of us, so the fence is gone.
You know, how do you keep them in?
Well, I mean, with a different fence, but okay. Somebody left the gate open, and so they had a free route right to Twin Peaks Road. So we had to get out and around them really quickly, and fortunately, we know how to do that stuff. But fortunately, we knew they'd gotten through that gate. But, you know, I mean, it's anything. You have 160 horses, you're going to have horse health problems. You know, we had a horse recently got a horrible syndrome called canker. It happens in their hooves, and we have to do surgery. We do it with vet involvement, and we do part of it, and he, you know, with the vet showing us how.
How many horses do you have, Russ?
160.
Yeah. And you use them all?
And except for about 6 to 10 at any given time that are retired. You know, they've earned the retirement, and we let them
go.
Yeah, we let them turn hay into manure until they go.
You know, it's a real pleasure talking to you. We are going to wrap up, but I wanted to mention to the listener, you're probably too modest to do this, but you are a big contributor to nonprofits by giving away dude ranch stays and experiences that no one ever knows about. And I want to thank you for doing that based on all these people that have benefited from your generosity, Russ.
Well, thanks. It's a generous town. We just play a little part in it.
How do we get a hold of you? I know you got a website. Go ahead and throw that out.
Yeah, it's just whitestallion.com, just simply whitestallion.com, or just do a web search for White Stallion Ranch.
This is not season, so you got some openings right now?
Oh, sure. Yeah, August is not peak season.
Gotcha.
I mean, but we operate 365 days a year, and every single thing we do happens all year long.
Thanks, Russ. I'm Alan Kaith for Ed Ackerley. Have a great weekend.